House will come to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 85. There are amendments.
House Bill 85 from Representative Stevenson, an act relating to motor vehicles, be it enacted by the state of Wyoming.
There are amendments. Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move Amendment 1 to House Bill 85 and ask for your considerable, or your favorable consideration. Your considerable favor. And so we just want to insert some language that takes away a little bit of our farmers' heartburn.
Discussion on the amendment. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just on in favor of the amendment, this addresses one of the concerns that I have heard that, you know, and who knows really how significant it is. I think most of our state highways are plenty wide enough to allow for the 3 feet. But in those events where you are on a roadway that doesn't allow this, this makes sure that it's clear that it's only when space allows. And I think is a good amendment, and I'd ask for your aye vote.
Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, what I have heard over the last week is, how do we enforce the 3 foot? And I think that this language helps with those concerns. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Question being called. We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 85. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 has passed the House. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 85 and ask for your favorable consideration. And this is really just a technical change. The Standing Committee amendment said who is operating lawfully, and our good folks in LSO caught that wrong grammar. So this just corrects it to which is operating, and so I'd ask your aye vote.
Any discussion on the amendment? We're voting on third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 85. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 2 has passed the House. Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to read third reading amendment 285 at this time. The reason I'm standing up here is I just want to again give a little bit of information. As we've been discussing this, all of the responsibility is totally on the motorist. There is nothing in here, and appreciate the Majority Floor Leader putting that last amendment. You know, we're trying to have he did specify that the bicyclists have to be lawful. Well, if you look in the lawful section, and he's read that to us, there isn't much. And I just really would like to have the bicyclists have as much responsibility for their safety as the cars. Nobody wants to run over a motorcycle or a bicyclist, and everybody feels bad when that happens. We've had some emails of some tragic things that have happened, but always it's the motorist that's at fault, and it really doesn't matter because the motorist is going to win the battle, but we just don't want these type of things. And if we could get the motorcyclist to have as much responsibility for their safety as we're trying to put on the motorists, that's my concern. I was talking to a law enforcement officer, and he said he was really glad that we were fighting this bill because there's some problems associated with bicyclists and motorists, and he didn't think this was going to solve it. So if anybody has anything to say on that, I'd be glad to hear it. If not, I'll...
Discussion on the amendment. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just real quickly, if your concern is that there's not enough restrictions on bicyclists on the roadways, deal with those statutes. There's statutes in there. They set forth standards. If you think they're not strong enough, strengthen them. But that's not what this bill is about. Again, this bill is about the responsibility when you're passing a bicyclist. So now we have a bill that says basically that if there's room, if the bicycle's operating lawfully, if they are as far right as practicable, if they're not riding more than two abreast, you have the obligation to give them 3 feet. Really, to vote against this bill, you have to find that makes no sense. And how does that not make sense? How does it not make sense that when you have the space available, when they're operating lawfully on the road as they should, that you give them that 3 feet to ensure that they're safe? And that's all the bill does now. And I think, we've had a lot of discussion on it, but it comes down to, again, the point I made from the outset, which is in those motor vehicle bicycle accidents, the bicycle always loses. So let's make sure that when you can, you operate safely around them. So I'd ask for your aye vote on the bill, and of course I'm against the amendment.
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this amendment, and I'm also bringing a bill that will address some of the concerns that you've had about other bicycle issues, and hopefully we can get this to be a safer sport. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in favor of this amendment. There's already laws on the books that you're supposed to treat bicycles just like another motor vehicle, and I don't see where this bill that we're looking at is going to make any difference. The outcome will be the outcome when the law enforcement arrives on the scene. Thank you.
Representative Pelkey.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in opposition to this amendment. At this point, this bill is merely a recommendation. It carries no penalty provision, and it would simply enhance those who are trying to promote bicycle safety's ability to simply state, give 3 feet. It's not just a good idea, it's the law. Let's give cyclists 3 feet. You'd give another vehicle on the road 3 feet. You'd give a motorcycle 3 feet if you were passing. Show due respect. These are not only our friends, our family, our neighbors. These are our children on their way to school. It may slow you down at some point where you have to wait for a little bit of room, but I mean, I'm surprised we should even be debating this at this point. 3 feet is a minimum standard. It's a minimum standard of safety, and it's a minimum standard of decency. I urge this body to vote against this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Yeagy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All I can say is we don't want to have the accidents, and we do need to have the bicyclists as responsible as we're trying to make the motor vehicles. So I'm not sure this is going to help that along, so I'll remove the amendment and we'll just vote. Thank you.
Third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 85 has been withdrawn. House Bill 85 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
No.
Baker.
No.
Baldwin.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Edmonds. Edwards,
no.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Greer,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey, excused, Hunt,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Jennings,
no.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
aye.
Larson-Lloyd,
aye.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
No.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
No.
Madden excused. McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
No.
Pinnell.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 33 aye, 25 no, 2 excused.
House Bill 85, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 85 has passed the House. Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Ladies and gentlemen of the 63rd, we've got some very special guests in from Northwest Wyoming. They drove down in a vehicle that had two number ones on their license plate. Unlike from the center of the state, they are doubly special. And they represent a real outstanding institution in our state, the Buffalo Bills Center of the West. And they're here, and they would like to invite all of you to the Little America tonight at 6 o'clock. And I'd just like to list off Director Bruce Eldridge, his wife Jan Eldridge, and members of the staff Kelly Jensen, Gina Penn Schneider, Rebecca Taggart, Gretchen Henrich, Megan Smith, and Lynn Petit. So let's give them a big round of applause. Welcome to the House.
Welcome to the House. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 131. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 4, Dry Bean Research, ayes 27, 2 noes, 1 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 132. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 18, Expungement of Misdemeanors, ayes 24, noes 5, excused 1, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 133, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 27, Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Highway, ayes 29, 1 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 134, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 37, State Protection of Data Privacy, ayes 29, 1 excused, signed Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 135, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 51, Water Development-Amendments, ayes 29, 1 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 136, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 64, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act Extension, ayes 29, 1 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Number 137, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 65, Savings and Loan Associations, ayes 29, 1 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 138, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 70, Cooperative Electric Utility Rate Adjustment, dash notice, ayes 29, 1 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 139, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 8, State Education Accountability and Assessment, ayes 20, noes 9, 1 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 134, seized property, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Esquivel, Halverson, Croker, Miller, Pelkey, Winters, 2 no votes, Representatives Crone and Pinnell, signed by Representative Croker, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom is referred House Bill 102, Property Sales Tax, Highest Bidder, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Dayton, Jennings, Madden, Wilson. Those who voted no, Representatives Edwards, Laux, Northrop, and Reeder, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 150, Arrest for Violation of Probation, respect the report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and those who voted no, Representative Esquivel and Winters, signed by Representative Croker, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 168, Water and Sewer Districts-Assessments, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Paxton, Danswanitzer, 1 no vote, Representative Lindholm, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 60, Trust Company Amendments, respectfully report saying back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Edmonds, Gay, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Somers, and Walters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Three referrals. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer House Bill 60 to your Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, it's re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to re-refer House Bill 178, Wyoming Native Specialty License Plate, to Committee Number 8, Transportation.
Thank you, Chairman Petroff. Without objection, so re-referred. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to go over again the list for general file. So we're going to start with House Bill 75. Joint Resolution 4, House Bill 124, 115, 46, 61, 94, 109, 89, and 106. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative Allen.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 75. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 75 from Representative Barlow, an act relating to the administration of government, adopting the compact for a balanced budget as provided, providing for the proposal and ratification of a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution of the United States as specified, providing for powers, duties, and procedures relative to the compact, providing definitions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom is referred House Bill 75, Balanced Budget Compact, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Dayton, Jennings, Laux, Madden, Northrop, and Reeder. Two no votes, Representative Edwards and Wilson. It is signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Excuse me. Representative Wilson. Madam Vice Chairman, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 75 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the sponsor.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Good work this morning. Now we're going to get to the real work. The place of the day when we get to really get down into the nuts and bolts of the issue. This bill, House Bill 75, is about restoring our republic. And it's doing so in a fiscal sense. And it's doing so in a way that is only available to the legislatures of this nation. Only available to the legislatures. 2 weeks ago, tomorrow, we all stood in this very room, raised our hands, and took an oath. And in doing so, we gave ourselves the opportunity to take part in every part of the constitutional republic that we live in. Ladies and gentlemen, this is opening one more of those opportunities for us to partake in our role as a legislature and as citizens in this nation. Now, this compact is really two things. It is an Article 5 Convention of States call and a application and a ratification, but it has done so in a vehicle, the vehicle of a compact. Now, this state has utilized compacts 27 other times for many different purposes. And if you think about water law and the way we think about water law, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting, ladies and gentlemen, this nation is worth everything we can do to defend this nation. We should put into this, and a compact is one way, one vehicle of implementing that for our republic. So it does two things. It has both the process and the product within these pages. It is the who, where, when, and how, and most importantly, it has the what, the balanced budget amendment. And ladies and gentlemen, I would submit to you why this might be important. Article 16, Section 2 of the Wyoming Constitution will speak exactly to that. In Wyoming, we have asserted that we will have a balanced budget unless the people decide we can do something differently. That is, in fact, what this balanced budget compact and the balanced budget language does. We hold the federal government to the same level of responsibility as we do the state of Wyoming. There are many details in this. That's why it's more than a one- or two-page thing. Because remember, how this happens and what happens is important. The process matters for safety, for certainty, and for speed. So, ladies and gentlemen, I know many of you have read this as I've gotten questions about certain verbs and certain terminologies, what they mean, and I appreciate that because you are digging into the details. Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, I will listen to the comments, I will listen to the concerns, I will listen to the questions, and then I will respond as appropriate. So with that, if there are no questions, Please, let's have a discussion on the Compact for America, the Balanced Budget Compact. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
I forgot your title.
Mr. Chairman.
This is talking to the U.S. Congress, about the U.S. Congress. When they increase the debt limit, the U.S. Congress has the ability with that tool to balance the budget by only being able to spend only what they take in, thus balancing the budget by themselves without us having to do that. Congress chooses not to take care of their responsibility of abiding by the document that they swore to uphold, which they had to do the same thing as we did. They swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States, but they refused to do so. What makes you think that they will abide by this amendment? The Constitution is not broke. Those that are broke are the congressmen that are in Washington that refuse to do the work that they were sent there to do. They need to abide by the Constitution that they were sent there to uphold. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am definitely in support of this bill. We have a crisis in America today, and that's our debt. Really, if you think about the greatest risk to our national security, I don't think it is those in the Middle East or another country. I think it really is from within, and that is our national debt, $18 trillion. Folks, we can't even fathom what that number really is, but that is outrageous. In fact, over the last 6 years of our current president, that number has more than doubled. And so we cannot continue to take on more and more and more debt because it does pose the greatest national security threat to our country. There's three things that we can do. We can continue the status quo. And if we continue the status quo, we're going nowhere. All we're doing is digging a deeper hole for ourselves. We can wait for Congress to act and initiate an amendment process themselves, which it is unlikely they are going to do, because as it was mentioned just a moment ago, they refuse to abide by any kind of spending limitations. In fact, all they continue to do is keep raising the debt ceiling. And that doesn't do us any good here in America. Or we can go this route. And what I like about this bill in particular is it's really narrow in scope, and it tends to define what can be done and what can't be done. I think each of us are concerned about a runaway convention. But keep in mind, whatever happens at a Article 5 convention, three-quarters of the states are going to need to approve that. They're going to have to ratify whatever it is that's made there at the convention. So I am not so much worried about a runaway convention as I am our national debt. It's kind of what scares you the most, a runaway convention or the national debt? Well, at this point, folks, if we continue the way that we're going, our country is doomed. And so I would be definitely in support of this bill and appreciate it coming forward. Thank you.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern with this bill, I do appreciate what it's trying to do and how it's trying to keep everything so clearly defined, but I'm not sure it's constitutional. In Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, it says, "No state shall, without the consent of Congress, enter into any agreement or compact with another state." So the Constitution itself says that we are not allowed to enter into a compact with another state without their approval. And so I don't think that we can bind what their approval is by saying, well, we're going to ignore that and enter into this agreement and then trust that they're going to approve it. I'm not sure that it works that way. So that's my primary opposition to this bill, because they might approve it, but they might approve part of it. They might call for the convention and not approve any of the what the compact is.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think over the course of the next few minutes, you may hear from me a number of times, and I don't want to wear you out with all of this, but I do want to make sure that questions as they come up are being thoroughly answered. And I appreciate, let me just take the previous question from the Constitution of the United States, Section 10 here, and what you can see as you read through Section 10 very clearly is it's talking about the states joining together to deal with foreign influences. If two states were to join with our neighbor to the north and form something like that without the consent of Congress, that is addressed in the Constitution. And so I appreciate that. But when we talk about a compact between states, we already have a number of compacts that have been instituted in the history of our country. But I just want to also point out that we, right now, what we're debating is whether the status quo is working. And I do believe that the status quo is the death knell of this country. And I hate to watch as we debate whether we're willing to stand up for what we believe in. But rarely in the last 100 years would you hear a comprehensive discussion of the true balance of powers. Every eighth grade civics class will teach a student that there is a system of checks and balances between the three branches of government. And I think that we all know those well, executive, judicial, and legislative. But what they failed to teach you and go into great depth on is the fact that there was also, for a very long time, people understood that there was also a compound republic. And so while there was a balance of powers at each level of government, there was also each level of government held the other in check. And that is the state's duty. That is the state's right. And we have unfortunately fallen in our duty in that regard. And it's time for us to stand up for what we believe in. Now, again, we cannot use names, but in a famous set of papers that were written shortly after the Constitutional Convention that were worked on by a group of individuals who were trying to teach the principles of federalism. Maybe that'll help you understand what I'm trying to aim at here. In number 51 of those papers, a gentleman made the statement, in a compound republic of America, the power surrendered by the people is first divided between two distinct governments. It's important for us to understand that we are one of those two distinct governments that has a right and has a duty to stand up for the powers that are being spoken of today. Unfortunately, what we haven't realized is that this external control on federal government, over the last 100 years, we have slowly watched it erode away to the point where now we're willing to settle for the status quo. Well, friends, I believe that everyone in this room cares deeply for our republic. And so all of us want the same thing. But the question is, what other way do we have to exert the powers of the state over the federal government than to utilize the very Constitution we all love and revere? There were two methods used in Article 5 of the Constitution to amend it. One of them was the method that has been used 27 times fully. 33 have actually passed through Congress. 27 of them have been ratified by the states. That's only one method. The other method reasserts the power of the state over the federal government. This is an opportunity for us to stand up and say, I'm sorry, you've gone too far. And so I'm going to probably stop right now so that I can assimilate more questions from you and try to counter those in the future. I appreciate the fears of those who have who bring those to the floor. And I believe that that is a very vital part of the debate. Let me say that I don't dismiss that very lightly, and neither would I want to. I believe that those fears hold every one of us in this room in a sense of dynamic tension that makes sure that the end result of this debate, of this discussion, is something that is profitable for our republic. But please know that just expecting, there was a certain famous inventor from years past that said it was the height of lunacy to expect to do the same thing over and over and over again and expect different results. And the truth is, I just realized I may have inadvertently called some of you loons. I'm not doing that, okay? But please understand, I'm trying to point out the fact that doing the same thing over and over and over again is not going to get us to where we need to be in our republic. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm on and for this bill, and just to touch on some of the issues that have been brought up, such as what were to happen if we failed, if the amendment didn't pass. At least we tried to correct something for future generations. We are all responsible for this debt incurred, which is over $18 trillion. And to not try to attempt to do something along those regards for these future generations, it's our chains or their chains, folks. I don't want to pass on those chains, and I'm pretty sure you don't want to either. $18 trillion. Well over. Furthermore, another concern that has been brought up is the rogue amendments that could come out of this deal. Well, first of all, 38 states have to ratify those amendments. 38 states. Now, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on in regards to that, 38 states. Thank you.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think there's a soul on this floor who doesn't believe that $18 trillion of debt is out of control. But this is the wrong solution for a number of reasons. First of all, we're fact-checking this, but I do not believe the national debt has doubled under this administration, but that's really not the issue. Let's go back 10, 14 years. 14 years when I only had two children. At the end of that administration, we had a budget surplus. The next administration came in, passed massive tax cuts, and we went to war. Doesn't take a PhD economist to know that that is a problem. And then we had the worst recession we've had since the Great Depression. So we really have to ask ourselves whether this is a good fix for the problem. Now, our elder statesman, a former senior senator, and another gentleman of my party led a task force that came up with a number of reasonable solutions to start addressing the national debt. And then there were a lot of other ideas kicking around at the same time. Any of those ideas would have been better than a balanced budget amendment, because the risk to our national economy of a balanced budget amendment and the risk to Wyoming are extreme. Does anyone sitting on this floor think we would continue to receive our federal mineral royalties if there were a balanced budget amendment? They're going to be looking for money everywhere. And, you know, if this passes and goes through 10 years, you know, we can all get together and find out if I'm right. But I think that's a risk to Wyoming, a risk that we ought to think about before we jump on this bandwagon. And second, it's really flies in the face of basic economics. And if you do a quick Google research, you will find that most leading economists think this is a very bad idea. The United States is still the largest economy in the world. There's another country out there that's nipping at our heels, but for the time being, we are still the largest economy in the world. We drive the world economy. And I think it's fair to say that if we had had a balanced budget amendment in place during the last recession, we would still be in a recession. And the problem is not the Constitution. The problem is Congress. And this budget amendment, if it were ever to become part of our Constitution and the compact and all of the rest, is not going to solve the problem of Congress. In fact, it might even make it worse. So I think we, even though, in my mind, this is an important issue and it makes a lot of sense on its face,
when you really think about it, I think we have to ask where it would really be good, whether it would really be good for the country and whether it would be good for Wyoming. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Mr. Speaker, it was spoken a while ago of the threat of the to the this country, of the biggest one being our debt. I could also add in there that it also just as big is the invasion by illegal aliens that do not disseminate into the country, the free trade agreements that we're passing with other nations that are giving away our rights to other countries that we will be bound by. But going back to the debt that we have that's $18 trillion is a very small portion of what is out there. The liabilities we have for the trust funds that we hold are broke. They have nothing in there. They are debt that we have, which I'm not sure how high that will bring the debt to. But also on top of that, every country in the world, when it trades oil, has to have U.S. currency, the dollar, to trade for oil. There is no other way that they can buy oil but by U.S. dollars. There has been a few suggestions and attempts to go to other currencies or other forms of changing oil for other forms of trade. If those countries are or were to drop the dollar, and that by itself, if they would get rid of their dollars that they hold as a reserve currency, that in itself would take the U.S. dollar into tailspin, and we would be the Weimar Republic again. This country has a lot of serious problems, and I don't believe in giving away the Constitution that we do have for something that most likely is going to happen either way. I would rather that we had our Constitution intact to solve our problems without having it done away with by a group of people that really do not like this country. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate what was just said, and yet I see a couple challenges in that. The challenge was very clearly stated. As a former republic that existed back in the 1930s, early 1930s, late 20s, and the hyperinflation that ensued was mentioned. It was shortly after that mentioned that that could be the possible future of this country as well. But then there was no solution offered. And yet, understanding all of this, at the founding of the republic, at the tail end of the Constitutional Convention, there was a gentleman that understood that there was only one power that was actually more powerful than the federal government, and that was the collective power of the states. And let me just say this also. This has nothing to do with political party. This is a bipartisan issue. And when we take, because the real issue here is not party, it's the question of the aggregation of power. We have the continued power functions many times like a black hole. It grows larger and increasingly more dense, and any other system of power out there that begins to compete with it is sucked into that black hole until it gets increasingly larger. Unfortunately, that is exactly the scenario that we are suffering in our country today. We have an increasingly powerful federal government, and the state's power is being constantly cut away. And so another point I want to bring up is if the problem is Congress, expecting Congress to fix Congress makes little sense. But that's the only solution that would be offered outside of the constitutional process that has been given to us. And if Congress can't fix the issue, the question is who can? The power that can and the constitutional power that can is the states. And so I believe that as we look at the overall issue, again, it's not party. And we're using the Constitution by the means that the Constitution gave us to try to reassert the power of the states. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not necessarily a comment on the bill itself, but rather on, as I understand this, this is not a motion for a balanced budget amendment, but rather simply a compact to create the amendment. And in that spirit, obviously the composition of the members of the compact and how they're selected are important. And Article 5 and Article 6 addresses that, whether I understand it to be satisfactory or not. But on page 18 and the number one line to that, instead of having an amendment, it calls for calling of a convention for proposing amendments limited to the subject matter. Do we have a draft, or is there a draft, which I couldn't find, of the actual proposed constitutional amendment that might help solidify the argument? I would appreciate the thoughts.
Representative Edwards.
Mr. Speaker, the choice that I gave and the reaction to the comment that was given, what should we do, is to force Congress into doing their job. There are many ways of doing that. One of them would be to let our congressmen know when it comes to raising the debt limit to vote no on it, as I did our two senators. And when I talked to Senator Enzi, I informed him in the Old West way of doing things. Whenever they increase the national debt, when they increase it, it takes from your money and my money that's in the bank. When they add to the money that's in circulation, it lowers our buying ability, and that we have in the bank that we haven't spent, it takes from that money. And I told both of them, they used to hang bank robbers in Wyoming. Whenever we passed the 17th Amendment, it took the response, and it would be the immediate response of our senators to do the will of the states. That is another way to get our senators to listen to exactly what this state has, because they would be appointed by this body that sits here. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and vote as you will on this bill. I've been reading it, and I want to make sure we all understand what it says. It starts, the substance of it starts on page 5 and runs through page 8. It's not difficult. So section 1 says, total outlays of the government shall not exceed total receipts except for debt that's authorized in accordance with this bill. Well, okay, maybe that's okay. Section 2, outstanding debt shall not exceed authorized debt, which initially is going to be set at 105% of existing debt. So there's a little bit of room in there. And then it says that authorized debt shall not be increased above the initial amount unless the increase is first approved by the legislatures of the several states. Then from Section 3, it says, from time to time, Congress can increase the authorized debt only after it first publicly refers to the legislatures of the several states an unconditional single subject measure proposing the amount of such increase, and the measures thereafter publicly and unconditionally approved by a simple majority of the legislatures of the several states. And then there's a little bit of cautionary language in there about quid pro quos. And then it says if the several states don't approve it within 60 days, then the deal is deemed disapproved and the authorized debt remains unchanged. Then we get to Section 4. Whenever the authorized debt exceeds 98% of the debt limit, the President shall enforce that limit by publicly designating specific expenditures for impoundment in an amount sufficient to ensure that the debt doesn't increase. And the impoundment becomes effective 30 days thereafter unless Congress first designates alternate impoundment of the same or a greater amount. And the failure of the President to designate
or enforce the impoundment as an impeachable misdemeanor. Well, good luck with that. We've been doing real well with that so far. And then we get to Section 5, no bill that provides for new or increased general tax shall become law unless approved by two-thirds roll call of a whole number of each House of Congress, except that won't apply to a bill that provides for a new end-user sales tax, which would completely replace every existing income tax levied in the United States. So I presume that that is by the government of the United States. So that'd be the federal income tax. So, vote as you will, but consider this. And I wish I had the numbers. We borrowed a lot of money during World War II. You can ask yourself, total number of people killed in World War II, probably 34 million people. We borrowed a lot of money. We won that thing. And we couldn't have done it without borrowed money. Maybe this would have worked. Maybe it wouldn't. It is true, as a Madam Minority Floor Leader pointed out, that administration before last, they passed Part D. They passed, they got us into a war. And they never figured out a way to pay for it. When we went to war in the war that I went in, not many people remember, but there was a surcharge that went on your income tax to pay for that war. We didn't do it the last time around. Our list of grievances is long about the national debt. It's almost endless about the national debt. And I've often said, you know, we run a great country on borrowed money. Because that's what we've been doing. And so I have sympathy for all these feelings. But I look at this thing and I say, can we anticipate that this will work in the future? That Congress can increase the debt limit except through the legislatures of the states. It's submitted to the state legislatures. Ours would be one as a simple single-issue question. If we don't act on it, if enough states don't act on it in 60 days, it's gone. And nothing happens. There's no contingencies in here for war, national disaster. What if Ebola did take off in this country, or some other vicious disease took off in this country, to the point that somebody could stand up and say, this disease is a greater threat to us than the national debt? Could we get the states to agree? Would they be any better than Congress? You know, I defend Congress all the time. Many of you have heard me say it. You shouldn't badmouth Congress. Our Congress people are doing exactly what they're sent back there to do. And the problem in this country is we're probably the most deeply divided we've been since the Civil War. And so we send our representatives back with our point of view. They send their representatives back with their point of view. They get to Congress and nothing happens. The thing is just locked up because the American people are locked up. We are deeply divided and we are in deep disagreement. And so now we get to some national crisis. Would it be sufficient to coalesce enough state legislatures to act within 60 days to authorize the debt? I don't know. I'll probably vote for this. But I share with you great misgivings about whether this would be a wise thing to do or not. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the previous remarks were very good, because that is something that, if extreme circumstances happen to this country, how could we answer it? And I do think, though, that within the language of your bill there, you're going to see a couple things. First of all, flexibility for borrowed military spending is already provided with that initial line of credit. Contemplated borrowing authority of 105% for outstanding debt on ratification could be as much as $21 trillion in certain cases, according to one testimony. But also, within that document there, there's some additional flexibility for borrowed military spending with the simple referendum process of simple majorities of Congress, which can request a simple majority of state legislatures to increase their initial line of credit. And so in the case of war, if you could imagine the tragedies of December 7th, 1945 on us again, it would be a very easy process within this particular bill for the federal government to petition the various states, and we would most certainly answer quickly. I know that in December we don't normally meet, but I could imagine us meeting in an emergency session to approve that initial line of credit. And so that is actually provided for in that bill. I just wanted to point that out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Interesting proposal, and what I'd like to hear a little more from my understanding is the ideas have come from at least multiple states, as I understand it, and a collage of people that are in it. Who was the big driver for Wyoming? And I think our great House members and Senate members could have created it on their own, but I have a notion there's something else back there. And how did that get to us to get started? And maybe that would help me understand, because usually where something comes from gives you an idea of what the expectations are and their past successes and so forth.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll preface this by just saying, as a member of the party that's represented by a donkey coming from the county that has an aerial tram, I'm in a slightly different category. But I'm also a businessman, and if I'm accepting this notion that an $18 trillion debt represents a huge crisis for our nation, and the only way we're willing to consider resolving this is by expenditures and not revenues, that doesn't make sense from a business perspective. I recognize that taxes are not considered to be a popular thing, but by ruling out completely the notion that we can raise some taxes in order to deal with what might be a national crisis, I cannot support this bill. Thank you very much.
Representative Edwards.
Mr. Speaker. The Constitution that our founding fathers gave it is the second greatest document that man has ever been able to read and abide by, the first being the Bible that God has given us. What we have in the Constitution, I'm afraid, will never be replicated again by man today. We have something that is great. I hope that you will vote against this bill. And I will sit down and let you vote.
Thank you. Representative Blackburn.
Speaking my first time to reserve my second time, please.
You can go.
Okay, here we go. You know, Mr. Chairman, I've heard debates on both sides this last week, maybe week and a half. I've got tons of emails, tons of calls. You know, if we don't stand now, when will we stand? We've tried many, many things in our history. Many things. It hasn't worked. Maybe this will. Let's give it a shot. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to go through a list of concerns I had, or I heard. And first of all, we do need to make a correction for the record. 1941, December 7th, is the correct date that I think one of the good speakers was referring to. A day. The Constitution is a tremendous document. And included in that tremendous document is, in fact, this opportunity. So if, in fact, you believe in that document and believe in the opportunities it has, this is a part of that, and we should be willing to exercise that portion. There was another concern expressed about the role that Congress has to play in this. There is a gentleman, a currently sitting congressman, who hails from this state, from the western side of the state, will be introducing that congressional part here in the near term, so that we will be in full compliance with the understanding that some of you may have about consent of Congress. There was a comment about what a balanced budget may or may not do. There is no question that fiscal policy matters. There is no question that you can starve an entity, a business, your family with poor fiscal policy. There is a difference between a good balanced budget and a poorly constructed balanced budget. I would give you that this one, and thank you to the speaker for reading out the components of this balanced budget, because it is in the compact, would guide us toward the possibility of a good balanced budget. I appreciate the fact that, as was stated, that we did lose one of the states' most powerful ways of influencing the national government, Congress, with the 17th Amendment. But, ladies and gentlemen, this one remains. Let's exercise it. The concern about the national emergency. I can't imagine this body or any other body not responding to the need to defend this nation. No different than some of you in times of war and peace answered that call. This nation, this republic of individual states through their state legislatures would respond as well. The question was brought about where the genesis for this was. For many years, there's been discussion within the national dialogue about a balanced budget, about the spending of our nation, and concern about it long before we had weren't deficit spending, long before control, because with the money also comes policies. We know that. That's how we guide certain things in this body. So who started it? This is a multi-generational effort. Ladies and gentlemen, that came long before us in other bodies of this nation and in within Congress are interested. Citizens every day are interested. Scholars and the working folk. Taxpayers and the next generation. There was a comment about this only anticipates handling it on one side, the expenditure side. Not true. Look at the balanced budget language. It actually provides for a way to address increasing expenditure, increasing revenues, but it raises the bar a little bit. It says, you know what, it's going to take two-thirds of you because we better make dang sure this is a priority for this nation and doesn't put us at greater risk. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd submit to you that this is not everything everybody wants, and maybe more than some people want, but this is a balance. This is a balance about this nation, this republic. It has certainty, it has safety, and it has speed. You don't have to pass the bill to know what's in it. It's in front of you today. Now, I'd like you to turn, or you don't have to turn, but I'll turn to the final page. It's the fiscal note. The fiscal note, no fiscal or personnel impact. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I would argue that this has a tremendous fiscal and personnel impact, because I think it will ensure this republic and ensure our children and grandchildren won't be saddled with something that they didn't create. Ladies and gentlemen, I would ask for your favorable consideration of House Bill 75 and all efforts that try to exert the state's rightful place in this republic. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Vice Chair Wilson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, excuse me, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 75 do pass. All those in favor say please aye. Or, you know what I mean. All opposed, say no, please.
No.
The bill passes.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B. Excuse me. All in favor, stand, please.
75.
All opposed? Stand. Oh, never mind. House Bill 75 passes. Representative Blakett.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Up in the South Gallery, we need to stretch after that debate. Up in the South Gallery is a friend of mine. He's a trooper with the Highway Patrol. In my first 4 years, he was downstairs guarding us, keeping us safe. Now he's out on the highways looking for you guys who speed. Recently, Trooper Gabe Testerman gave one of his kidneys to his sister to help her live her life. So please welcome Gabe Testerman.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution number 004. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution number 4 from Representative Lindholm, a joint resolution petitioning Congress to call a convention to propose amendments to the Constitution of the United States to require a balanced federal budget. Mr. Speaker, the Committee number 3, Revenue, to whom is referred House Joint Resolution 4, Balanced Budget Amendment Resolution, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Dayton, Jennings, Laux, Madden, Northrup, and Reeder. 2 no votes, Representative Edwards and Wilson, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Vice Chairman Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the body, just in case some of you slept through the last bill after lunch, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 4 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I would turn the presentation over to the bill to Representative Lindholm.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in favor of this bill, obviously. But first, I'd like to go over the why for the 63rd legislature. Most of you already know this, but it's good to be reminded. On November 28, 2014, the gross national debt hit $18 trillion. This is greater than our gross domestic product, the first time since World War II. Only 13 of the world's 172 nations have a debt greater than the size of their economy, most being European countries. The federal government plans to incur at least $7 trillion in debt by 2023. The problem is there is not enough money in the world to finance this debt, and there hasn't been. To finance our current debt, the national government spent $2.7 trillion on the Social Security Trust Fund surpluses, leaving that fund empty with no cash to pay for future obligations. It looted $830 billion from the Civil Service Retirement Fund and $750 billion from the Military Retirement Fund. All of this money will have to be repaid within 20 years. Granted, I want everybody to really look at this. This is not one aisle's fault. This is an issue that extends the last generation of spending issues that we have come up with. When that was not enough money, it borrowed $6 trillion from foreign entities, and as our bankers, these foreign entities have significantly influenced our foreign trade policy to the detriment of the American worker, causing the 2014 trade deficit to be more than $800 billion. When that was still not enough money to finance the debt and not having any other place to go, the Federal Reserve Bank electronically printed almost $2 trillion and financed 38% of the national debt over the last 5 years, artificially driving down the interest rate on the national debt. We have a big problem. The Congressional Budget Office projects that debt will increase an average of $1 trillion a year over the next 10 years. There's not enough money available in the world to pay for this debt. Foreign entities are losing interest in loaning our government money to finance its annual expenditures. During 2014, the country in the Far East, ownership of our debt actually declined from its 2013 amount. in order to finance the anticipated debt, the Congressional Budget Office stated the interest rate would have to rise to 5% to attract private investors. If this occurs, the interest payment by 2020 could very well reach $1 trillion. If interest rates do not rise, the Federal Reserve could very well be the primary source to fund the deficits. History has taught us that printing of currency to pay for its government is the last act of a desperate nation. We are on the verge of an economic and political collapse, all caused because Congress runs massive deficits every year. So what can be done to stop this? We can do nothing. That is always a public policy position, but if we do nothing, we will lose our country. We can elect people to office who will quit spending and borrowing. This hasn't happened in over 40 years. Or we can make it illegal for Congress to frivolously borrow money to pay for its annual expenditures by proposing and ratifying a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Since Congress will not restrain spending and will not propose a balanced budget amendment, this responsibility falls on the shoulders of the state legislators using the power given to us by the framers in Article 5 of the Constitution. Referring to an Article 5 Convention of the States, one of the famous framers wrote, "We may safely rely on the disposition of the state legislators to erect barriers against the encroachments of the national authority." A convention for proposing amendments is not a constitutional convention and never should be called such. There is no provision in our Constitution for such a meeting. Instead, a convention for proposing amendments is an assemblage of delegations from the states with the limited purpose of proposing amendments, the same authority granted to Congress 365 days a year. As a result of significant research which has been conducted over the last 5 years, the process for the convention is quite clear and orderly. 34 states need to pass a resolution applying for a convention for the same subject, in this case a balanced budget amendment. At the present time, there are 24 active state applications for this convention, just like the one in front of you. Only 10 more are needed, and the resolution is filed in 12, only 10 more are needed, and at this time, 12 other states have filed. On January 9th, the United States House of Representatives passed a rule instructing the clerk of the House to begin counting these resolutions. Many in Congress want this convention. When 34 applications are received, Congress shall pass a resolution setting the time and place for the convention. That is the only authority Congress has. The legislatures will then pass a resolution determining the number of delegates it will send to the convention, how they will be chosen, what specific instructions they will receive, and how and why they will be recalled. These delegates are the agents of the legislature. They are not independent contractors. This is a convention of states, not a convention of delegates. Once the convention convenes, voting will be by the state, because this is, by definition, a convention of the states. At every convention of the states in our nation's history, and there have been more than 30 of them, voting has been by state. Wyoming will have as much power at this convention as our far neighbors to the west and our far neighbors to the east. The convention will set its own rules, which will likely be similar to the rules presently being written by the Assembly of State Legislators. This is a group of state legislators from more than 30 states which have been meeting for this purpose. We already have one representative from Wyoming that has attended this. Wyoming's involved. We're there. The convention will then deliberate. That is its purpose. It will craft an amendment which will solve the problem and will likely be ratified by 38 states. Remember, anything that comes out of this has to be ratified by 38 states. Two-thirds of the legislatures called this convention for the exclusive purpose of proposing a balanced budget amendment. That is the charter for the convention. The only power this convention has is to propose an amendment pertaining to the subject. Any amendment proposed outside of that subject is ultra-virus, outside the authority of the convention, and will not be referred by Congress to the legislatures for ratification. Keep in mind, this will be the most important political event since the Philadelphia Convention of 1787. Everyone in the world will know it has been called for one subject, and the whole world will be watching as this assembly will be televised gavel to gavel. Any attempt by any group to change a subject will draw scorn and disgrace upon those individuals, as they will not only be violating the charter of the convention, but also the integrity of our Constitution. My fellow members, once again, 24 states have passed this resolution. It is quite possible 10 more will pass it by July of this year. We have friends in Congress who are prepared, upon receiving 34 applications, to promptly pass a resolution and convene this convention, which can be held in 2016. I ask for your favorable support to House Joint Resolution Number 4, and I stand for questions.
Representative Larson Dan.
At this time, I think I'll pass on speaking. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple clarifying things. One, I don't see anything in the Constitution that does give us the authority to limit the convention to one specific amendment. Article 5 just says the authority is there to call for a convention to propose amendments. I think that it's foolish to assume that we actually have the power to limit it. I think any amendment that's proposed would be fair game at that. And my other concern with this process in general is the argument I keep hearing over and over again is Congress isn't obeying the Constitution, so we need to change it so they will obey it. And to me, that's kind of along the same lines as a parent saying, well, my son doesn't obey his bedtime, so I'm going to just make his bedtime later, and then he'll be suddenly obeying it. I'm just concerned that we might end up with a change we don't like to the Constitution. I don't believe the Constitution's broken. I believe it needs to be enforced. If it were enforced, we wouldn't have all of this spending that's going on. And I'm just convinced that anything we come up with, there's going to be a loophole or Congress has historically proven that they can find a way around any requirements that seem to be in the Constitution now. So I'm just not sure how a new amendment is going to change that as well. So I would just urge caution as we move forward on this subject, and I'll be a no vote.
Representative Larson Dan.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, to rebuttal the good comments from the representative that just spoke, Congress must receive requests for a convention on the same subject, so that would limit what was brought up.
Representative Edwards.
Mr. Speaker, I could tell you all the stuff I just got done telling you, but you already heard me, and there's no need of me repeating myself. I would also like to make another piece of information that you might consider if this goes ahead, or either one of them. This balanced budget by itself will not work without getting control of the Federal Reserve System, a bunch of private bankers. I hope that you will consider that also. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to take on a particular question that has been raised here. And the question is, if Congress is not following the Constitution as it is today, why do you expect that they would follow it in the future if we changed it? The answer is simply this. They are following the Constitution as it has been interpreted. Unfortunately, because of the idea of judicial review, there has been a complete, unfortunate constitutional convention that has been ongoing for quite some time. And so the analogy here of setting a child's bedtime and then using some other means of ensuring that they meet that bedtime, I just know how it works in my own house. When Daddy walks in the room, it's bedtime. And I'm able, because of my position, to enforce the rules. And so in the United States of America, Daddy should be the state's. The states are the ones that should have the power. Unfortunately, we've watched that power eroded for some time. And so I'm most definitely an aye vote on this. I believe that this is the means by which it was designed in the Constitution to ensure that the states retain the power that they need to rectify this situation.
Madam Minority Floor Leader?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I'm just not at the mic. Thank you.
You're just in the neighborhood. Representative Bartle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to go back to the Wyoming Constitution, Article 16, Section 1, limitation on state debt. Section 2, creation of state debt in excess of current taxes. Ladies and gentlemen, we expect this from our own state. This is how we operate. This is how, when we come down here, supplemental budget, budget year, etc., this is how we operate. Saying what we mean and meaning what we say to our federal government through this republic makes sense. In favor of this. Secondly, ladies and gentlemen, we talked about, there was mention of somebody might be participating and how this might work. Ladies and gentlemen, I gained permission from the previous speaker of this body, and I will seek that permission again from current leadership to continue to understand, to be a part of making sure that if a convention of states is called, that it is a meaningful convention, it is a safe convention, it is a convention that actually accomplishes the work that this nation would require. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Larson Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to read a quote from one of our founding fathers. And it is Thomas. Whoops, I can't probably say that. It is quoted, to preserve our independence, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. I wish it were possible to obtain a single amendment to our Constitution, an additional article taking from the federal government the power of borrowing.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to finish up, 34 states, two-thirds of our states have to call for this convention to happen. Currently 24 on record. This is coming, folks. 12 applications are out there. This is going to happen. I would prefer that the state of Wyoming be involved in this process before we get an invite to show up to something that we have not had any involvement in. I think it behooves us to do this for the next generation. On the last bill, I spoke about the chains resting on us, incurred debt that we have looted. And I would prefer that debt not move on to the next generation. Also, I'd remind everybody that according to Article 5, it takes 38 states to ratify any amendment brought. This is not only a safeguard, but this guarantees that the communication process does take place. That the communication process does happen if a convention of the states is called. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I don't know how I stand on this, but I just go back to my experiences that I've had. And getting 34 states to agree to anything is a pretty tall order. Some of the national meetings that I attend, and one in particular just really killed me. And it was one of the western states that we've been requesting a port access so that we could market some of our mineral assets. And there was a resolution brought before this body, and it dealt with not promoting or enabling global warming through exportation of coal. And, you know, I stood up and I said, you know, you're talking about dust along the highway, along the railroad track in your state that doesn't exist because you don't have all the data, but you're talking about our state's survival. You're talking about our economic development. You're talking about how we fund what we do. And we don't have a diversified economy. And so, I mean, just based on that experience, I think every state is different. When I go to conferences and we talk about Medicaid expansion or the ACA, large population states love it. States that have a federal match rate of 67% love it. We don't. I look at the differences that we have state by state by state and thinking about what might be the right solution for us because we do balance our budget. Other states may view as an affront to their values or their fiscal responsibility or I'm just saying, I don't know how I feel about this. I know how I feel about a federal balanced budget, but the process to get there, I'm still unclear, and I haven't made up my mind. The point is, when you think about the differences that we have state by state, we may be unified in a mission of having a balanced budget, but the real question is, by what pathway? Because there's going to have to be give and take. And it would be really easy for another state, especially if they lean toward the theory that global warming is caused by the minerals. One of the easiest ways that they could say would be to take away our mineral royalties. And that would stop two problems, global warming, and it would add more money to the federal budget. And so I guess I'm asking this body to think about what are the unintended consequences of this decision. What else could happen? And are we going to gain everything we need? And at what cost? So do I believe the Fed should balance their budget? Oh, you bet I do. But I don't want it to be at the detriment of our state. And so I guess I'm just asking you to think about if we're going to stay on one subject, and it kind of worries me that there's only five of us in this body who were in the body during special session, and the special session was to address medical care in Wyoming, and yet the pathways that we saw along the way were very divisive. And the opinions of how to get where we needed to be, and that is keeping doctors in Wyoming. That was the topic. That was the one subject that brought us together for special session. And yet the pathways of how to do that were so diverse and so divisive that it was a pretty contentious session. And so it's not the goal, I think, is the correct goal. The methodology may be a bitter pill to swallow if it doesn't go our way. I really don't have the solution. I just want you to think about the pathway and where is it going to lead us, and is it going to really help Wyoming in the end, or is it going to hurt us? I mean, our federal mineral royalties could be just as easy to snatch away as our AML money was. And it's hard to think about, you know, if we think about having the mineral money, then we think, well, maybe we could take over some of the responsibilities that the federal dollars pay for now. But if we don't have our federal mineral royalties, then what will we do? Then what? So think carefully about the pathway to get where you want to go, because you can't just think about the destination. You have to think about how you're going to get there. And quite frankly, who else is going to be on the airplane with us? Or the bus, or the train, or the Volkswagen? I mean, that little teeny tiny car that looks like a bug. I'm just saying, it's not a simple solution. It's not a one direction. There are a lot of things that could happen along the way, and I want you to think through some of those things before you make up your mind on this vote. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the remarks that we just heard, and I think that in many ways it can bring great comfort to this body, because it was very ably pointed out how difficult it is to get an amendment to go through. Let me just tell you, over the last 150 years, Congress has received more than 500 applications from the states to convene a convention under Article 5. However, Congress has never received an application from two-thirds of the state on the same subject. So 34 states have never agreed on the same subject to convene an Article 5 convention for proposing amendments. So the next thing, too, is when it comes to ratification, then it takes three-quarters or 38 states. So in the scenario that you just heard, if there was some amendment that was proposed that was going to be detrimental to many of the Western states would immediately, of course, this body would vote no. And so that is a very wonderful safety mechanism. And I believe that the bar should be set that high because we as the states function as the final method of ratification. And so when something that is terrible to the state of Wyoming comes forward, we're able to say no. And obviously it would be detrimental to many. I think that that safety mechanism, the very things that have been outlined, is very, very good for us. And this, for that reason, I think that it's a wonderful reason why we ought to use the method found in the Constitution in Article 5. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to what this amendment can do, I take great faith in the minds of this country. I take great faith that there are great minds out there. Calling 50 states together to hash out and decide how this amendment should read, I take great faith in that. There are certain things in this resolution that are called out and called out in the other 24, one of which is that the United States, in proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States requiring that in the absence of a national emergency, including but not limited to an attack by a foreign nation or terrorist organization within the United States of America, the total of all federal appropriations made by the Congress for any fiscal year may not exceed the total of all estimated federal revenues for that fiscal year together with any related and appropriate fiscal restraints. This isn't going into saying this absolutely has to be your amendment. But what it is going in to say is that 50 of our states will gather their greatest minds to craft this balanced budget amendment. And I take great faith in that. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Vice Chair Wilson's House Joint Resolution 0004, motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill or House Joint Resolution number 004 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The bill passes. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 124. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 124 from Representative Croker, an act relating to highways, establishing the right of counties to determine highway rights of way on specified federal lands, providing definitions, requiring notice, providing for judicial review, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred House Bill 24, Determination of Highway Rights of Way on Federal Lands, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Kennedy, Eklund, Laux, Reeder, Walters, and Daves Wanacher, signed by Representative Daves Wanacher, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? The chairman's wanted, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 124 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendments. And members of the body, the Standing Committee Amendments, I'll go ahead and go through those. They look very, very complicated, but we did basically two things in committee. The first one was we deleted the findings, which is on page 2, lines 1 through 13. And upon doing that, then we had to renumber all the other statutes, and that's why you see delete this and insert that. But the other thing of importance on line 3, or page 3, line 20, we added and inserted the fact that any valid highway right-of-way adopted by RS 2477 right-of-way pursuant to this act shall not exceed 30 feet in width. And there was some concern in the committee that if the ATVs had torn up a piece of a property or whatever, and by aerial photography and stuff, it appeared that, you know, it was an 80-foot racetrack going around there, that would be what would happen. So I would stand for any questions.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment, or is there any discussion? Sorry. The question is called. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Well, the standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back. Is that all? Are there any more? We are on the Chairman Zawana, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the explanation on the bill, I'll turn it over to the fine representative from the center of the state, Representative Croker.
Chairman Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is a little bit of an old friend to the body. We passed it out 2 years ago, and it just never came up for a hearing in the Senate, so I bring it back again. Let me give a little bit of background on this bill.
Thank you.
In 1866, the United States Congress passed a bill to help encourage the settlement of the Western states, and the bill was RS 2477. I'm going to read the entire bill to you. The right-of-way for the construction of highways across public lands does not otherwise reserved for public purposes is hereby granted. Wouldn't it be nice if all congressional bills were limited to that length? But I digress. So basically what that 1866 law said was that anybody could create roads across federal land at any time. In the West, and that was necessary because as homesteaders were coming and others, they could just cross the land as they wanted. In 1976, Congress passed an act known as FLTMA that ended the ability for people to create new roads and new right-of-ways across federal land. But one of the things that it did is it specifically said that any existing rights were still valid, and nothing in this act or any amendment made by this act shall be construed as terminating any valid right-of-way or other land use or authorization existing on the date of approval of this act. So what federal law said was that any road that is currently across federal land, the states own a right-of-way to, as long as that road, you know, existed when this bill was passed in 1976. So that brings us to today. And one thing that is interesting is under federal law, then, we do have ownership of those rights of way, but as a state, we don't have any method for actually recording and filing those rights of ways and making sure that our ownership of those is recorded. And several years ago, in the state that borders us to the southwest, the federal government came in and tried to close several roads across BLM in that state, BLM land that was in that state, and that state sued the federal government and won, and it was ruled that yes, they did have the right to keep those roads open and maintain that right of way. And so the federal courts have ruled that we do have this right, But again, we don't have a method in Wyoming of making sure that we've recorded these roads and these abilities. And so that's what this bill attempts to do, is it basically just gives the counties the option of going in and giving them a formal process to record these rights-of-ways. We heard testimony that there are at least two counties in the state that have gone through and documented all these roads, and so they know that where they are, so they have all the information that's there. They just don't have a process in place to allow them to actually file with the state to say, yes, we are formally claiming these rights of ways. And I think this is vital to the state to get these documented and claimed, because we have a lot of state land that is only accessible by the roads that currently exist across federal land. And so, again, this is just an opportunity. There's nothing required about it. It doesn't force the counties to do anything. It just gives them the option of filing those claims and making sure we have a record for it. And, again, it's only across federal land, and it's only for roads that exist currently and did exist prior to 1976 when that law is passed. So that's the overview of the bill. If anybody has any specific questions in the bill, I'll happily get into them. But if not, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say that this is an excellent piece of legislation, quite useful to us in our community. Where the good bringer of the bill comes from, his district adjoins mine, and we have real trouble with access there. And this will give us a tool to kind of straighten out the conflicts. We've almost gotten back to the days of war, trying to get around on the BLM, the public domain. It's been troublesome for over 25 years. So I think this is a real good step in the right direction. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with that last comment about the bill, and I just wanted to confirm with the bringer on page 8, 2416107, we're satisfied that the language is strong enough that by asserting this claim against the road, we do not obligate the county to any maintenance obligation unless separately the county agrees that they'll undertake that obligation. Is that what we're seeing in the bill, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that is correct. No county is obligated to do anything.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative or Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 124 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The bill passes. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 115. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 115 from Representative Escobel, an act relating to motor vehicles, amending the time period for registration and payment of taxes on the purchase or transfer of ownership of a motor vehicle, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, the Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred House Bill 115, Vehicle Registration Timing, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that I do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Kennedy, Eklund, Dave Zwanitzer. Those who voted no, Representative Laux, Reeder, and Walter, signed by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 115 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. What we did on the Standing Committee Amendment, quite often when we have bills that deal with the county clerks and titles, we change the effective date. And so we change the effective date to be January 1st of 2016. And I believe that's the only one we have. So if there's any questions, I stand for those. If not, I would call for the question.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment passes. The standing committee amendment number blah, 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 sorry, has passed. We're back on the bill. There you are, Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the explanation of the bill, I'll turn it over to the fine representative from the capital city, Representative Esquivel.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 115, I actually put a handout to kind of give you an idea of what I'm talking about here. And what the handout shows you is a permit that they put on your vehicle when you bought it. And this one is a used vehicle. It's 4 years old. It represents about the average price of what a vehicle is these days. And when I started searching what other states do with their vehicle registration and taxes, none of the states that border Wyoming have this 45 to 50 day window on which you should register and pay your taxes on a vehicle. So if you have teenagers, you realize accidents happen, you realize there's mechanical breakdowns with vehicles, and there's emergencies where you're not planning on purchasing a vehicle, but then you end up having to. So what I found out is if you look at the date on the payment stub that's on top, is exactly the same date as when the registration was due. So you flip it over and you look at the taxes, and when that was paid is exactly the same date as when the registration was due. So what my bill does is it adds 15 days to the statutes of when vehicles need to be registered and when the taxes need to be paid. To spread out those initial costs of having to purchase a vehicle, so all the costs don't fall within that same 5 day window. I think it's consumer friendly. It helps people when they have those mechanical breakdowns. Those emergencies happen if you have a wrecked vehicle. This is one of the instances that also happened. You purchase a vehicle, a brand new vehicle. You finance that vehicle and you drive it off the lot. You call your insurance company before that. You switch the insurance coverage over to the new vehicle. You're driving home and you get in a wreck. Do you think the insurance company is going to reimburse you for the cost that you paid a half hour before for that vehicle? Usually it's about $3,000 or $4,000 that a new vehicle will depreciate within that first couple of days of driving it. So I started looking to see what was going on with surrounding states. I started pulling different permits. I used this analogy to give you an example of what consumers in Wyoming face when they buy new vehicles, and pretty straightforward if there's any questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Oh, excuse me. Chairman Patton.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. It's my understanding that the insurance contract between the carrier and the customer provides on most automobile policies, perhaps not in all of them, that it reads the described vehicle or its replacement thereof. If that is the case, the 15 days doesn't bother me. I just want to make sure that part of it is automatically done by contract between the customer and the company.
Representative Esquivel, did you have anything to say on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Usually the contract between the purchaser and the dealer, at least in other states, you can actually add the taxes onto your payment. Wyoming doesn't really give you that option except for in the cases of certain vehicles, but not automobiles. ATVs, for example, I think you can. But before you drive that vehicle off the lot, you do have to call your insurance person and tell them that you traded in the old vehicle or the old vehicle was in a wreck. Or by then, they already know that that vehicle's been in a wreck. So you do have to transfer the insurance over to the new vehicle before you drive it off the lot.
Representative Walters?
Representative Zwanzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, and we've had this bill before, and I have the same philosophical problem, I guess, every year, is why would we allow an even greater extension on something that we're already letting them defer their taxes for 45 days? I mean, there's no real other product in our economy that I can think of off the top of my head that allows you to already defer your taxes on that product. Most of the time, you pay your taxes at the point of sale. I mean, on anything from computers to chewing gum. On vehicles, we understand that we don't want the point of sale being to take in that tax money and have that burden. You have to go get your license plates anyway, and so you go down to the county courthouse and you pay your tax title and license at once. But fundamentally, are we encouraging people to buy products they can't afford because they know they can wait a couple more months until they have the extra burden of paying the tax? I mean, in my mind, you know, if you can't afford the car, don't buy it. We don't allow you to, well, you can't quite afford it, well, buy it, and then you get a couple months now extension until you actually have to pay the rest of what is your cost of purchase. I mean, every product we have has a sales tax. It's arguably lower in other states and in some counties than it is here in the county I reside in. But I guess how would you respond to those type of questions of if you can't afford it, don't buy it, instead of what we're doing is allowing you to extend the time period of when you can make up what you should incorporate in your purchase from the beginning?
Representative Escobel.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly why we should do it, because this isn't like any other product. These are $40,000, $50,000 products, and the amount of the taxes that we, as a state, ask the consumer to pay are pretty high taxes. And I think that's why you want to spread out the initial costs.
Is Chairman Zwanzer, is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 115 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
The bill has passed, committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 46. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 46 from Representative Gay, an act relating to crimes and offenses, specifying that it is unlawful to recklessly or with criminal negligence injure or kill a police, fire, or search and rescue animal as specified. Providing a penalty and providing for an effective date, Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 46, Nix's Law, respectfully report saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass for the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Escobel, Halverson, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, Winters. Those who voted no, Representatives Baker and Croker, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 46 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. The amendment, the Standing Committee Amendment changes several things. We made restitution by order of the court a possibility. We changed it from a felony to a misdemeanor. The possible sentence we reduced from 5 years to 1 year. We also changed the fine from $10,000 to $750. So with that explanation on the Standing Committee Amendment, I'll call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion or the amendment carries. Standing amendment committee number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gay will explain the bill.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nix's Law is a constituent-initiated bill. We had a sad incident in my community last summer where a police dog was left in a hot car over the 4th of July weekend, and the police dog subsequently died. Also, the agency that was in charge of the police dog attempted to cover up the information that this had happened, and for 6 weeks there was sort of an information blackout until the news eventually broke, and there was quite a bit of indignation in the community over the incident, and basically no sanctions were brought against the person that caused this animal officer to die. I call a police dog an animal officer because there are other kinds of animals involved in this bill. The standing committee amendments improved the original bill quite a bit. I go along that this should be a misdemeanor offense. The $750 fine is a standard misdemeanor fine, and allowing the court to order restitution if necessary, or at the pleasure of the court, really, actually recaptures the value of the deceased animal officer. So all those things considered, the amendments made it a much better bill, and I ask for your aye vote on it. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Oh, excuse me. Vice Chairman Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do just have a question, and I did vote for the amendment. I thought that improved it a lot. But my question is, seeing as we're talking about negligence, I'm just wondering, as a matter of information, how does the penalty for this negligence compare to negligence that results in the death of your pet or some other animal like that?
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We actually have reckless or criminal negligence to injure a police dog. The difference being that a police dog or a animal officer, as I prefer to call them, is that these are highly trained beings. They're not really property of a police department. These are living animals that work with a human being, a master relationship with that. They go, in the case of the dogs and even horses, I suppose, are allowed to go home with the officer at night, and they become a de facto member of the officer's family. So there's a difference because you have this indistinct line between a regular animal that's your pet, that is your pet. In this case, the state or an agency has investigated considerable, and it can be in the tens of thousands of dollars investment in training the animal and the owner together. And if the owner or handler recklessly or maliciously causes injury or death, that's why we have a penalty against this.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's exciting to see that my vice chairmanship is lasting all afternoon. I wasn't clear. I didn't mean how is it different philosophically. I'm just wanting to find out from my own information that if I were to negligently kill my own chocolate Labrador Retriever, what would be the penalty?
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's not really germane to this bill, and I wouldn't know if an individual recklessly killed their own animal. I don't know what the penalty would be, and it's not part of this. This is specific toward animal officers that are police or rescue type animals. Representative Steinmetz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I appreciate the intent of this bill. Something like this, though, came up in our community where the police dog was a dare dog, and it was off-leash, and actually one of my relatives ran over the dog, and we had to take up funds and spend a lot of time litigating the situation, and he was found not at fault but never recovered those damages. Do you have any thoughts on that as to how the law would respond?
Representative Gay.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm aware of the incident that happened in your community, and I believe the troopers said that that had happened twice, that the dog was off leash and got run over by traffic. These things happen. That would be deemed an accident, not necessarily as a cause of recklessness or negligence. It's just one of those things. If an animal is off the leash and he's going around the car sniffing and he gets run over in traffic, that would be taken into consideration, and you know, they'd be off the hook. Unless, you know, in the case of Nix, it was definitely a reckless act that resulted in his death, and that's what we're aiming for, is to eliminate these reckless incidents.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Representative. Do you have any ideas as to how we might help these other folks that have to pay for the litigation when the officer, in fact, does claim that it was their fault and take them, you know, they have to go to court to defend themselves?
Representative Gay.
The reckless behavior would be on, in the case you described, the court would have to prove that it was reckless behavior on the part of the citizen, whereas Nix's law, the reckless behavior is aimed at the trainer or handler of the animal. The guy with the dog that went through the training, if he is who recklessly kills the dog, he or she is the person who's liable.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regard to the last comment, I guess I look at page 1, line 15, any person. Page 2, line 6, any person. But I don't think it's limited to the individual would have authority or over that. So that's the one question. The second question I have, I guess there's going to have to be a lawyer stand up at some point and tell me or inform the body about whether the bar of knowingly, willfully, and without cause or justification is higher or lower bar than reckless and through criminal negligence. Because in one case, we have a felony, and in the second case, we have a misdemeanor. And I look at those qualifications, I'm not sure that it shouldn't be more similar or flipped, or I'm just not sure where the bars are for those two undeterminations. So thank you. Those are questions for anybody that would like to address them. Thank you.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, that's a tough call. The bill was originally drafted with a felony provision for this behavior, and then after some discussion and deep thought regarding training of the handler as well as the animal, very unlikely that it would be a malicious thing, like an officer pulling out his gun and shooting his dog for no apparent reason. That would already be covered in killing an animal officer. But through an act of negligence, leaving a dog in a car for too long or beating a mule, like a rented mule, is a different situation, and we want to be able to cover that if that situation comes up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pelkey.
You know, there's a lot of, Mr. Chairman, there's a lot of debate or a number of questions going on here.
Much of the language in this bill relies on terms of art, negligence, and recklessness, and I don't think that this presents as much of a gray area as some of the questioners have suggested.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To clarify one of the questions that was asked about the standard, negligence is a much lower standard than knowfully, willfully, et cetera. So it is a the felony provision that's already in statute is basically kind of the difference between premeditated murder and manslaughter, if you want to think about it that way, where if you knowingly make an attempt that, hey, I am going to, my goal is to set out and kill this police dog, that is already covered under statute, and that is a felony. This would add, what is an accident? Like this case where the officer left the dog in his car. It was an accident, but he was negligent because he's had training. The logic is he should have known better, so there should be some standard there. So there's a slight difference in the standards. I also believe, and I'm going from memory from testimony, but don't know the statute off the top of my head, that this does treat police animals differently than pets. And I'm basing that based on testimony we received, where when people testified, they gave reasons why they should be treated differently. So I'm assuming that the fact that they were testifying to us that should be treated differently means that the law would. And then the last thing I do want to clarify for the body, just to make sure everybody's on the same page here, we did lower it from a felony to a misdemeanor, but we still are talking about sending somebody to jail for accidentally killing a police dog is what it comes down to. So just understand that that is what you're voting on, and if you decide that that's an appropriate penalty, so be it. But that is what we're talking about here.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Natrona County in particular was bothered by a tragic death of a police dog, and I think the community is up and really angry about that having happened. My question is this. That was a one-time issue. They've taken a lot of steps to recognize the seriousness of that with the person who caused it, and that's been kind of in their bailiwick. My question is this. Have we had any other experiences like that? I had to leave for a few minutes, so if you covered that, I apologize for that, but I'd still like to hear, is this a one-off, or is this something that we've had going on and needed for a variety of reasons, not the one very tragic instance in Natrona County?
Representative Gay.
I would not call it a one-off thing. I'd say it's a very rare situation to have an animal actually die. To be specific, the incident that Nix was involved in, the dog was left in the car for 6 hours over the 4th of July with the engine running in the car, and the animal's master, the police officer, was with a trainee at the time, and the trainee had asked, hey, should we go turn on the air conditioner, should we check on dog, and the guy kept saying, no, it'll be okay, everything's fine. And then after they found the dog dead, there was this cover-up, and that was what really brought up the indignation in the county, was that there was a six-week cover-up. They let the patrolling officer take the dead dog home and bury it in his own yard, and hopefully nobody would find out, was sort of what came of it. By codifying this, it'll give the agencies that own an animal a vehicle by which they can report the death of an officer and initiate an investigation.
Chairman Lockhart.
Then as a follow-up, to your knowledge, this was the one example that triggered the bill and a process to... thank you.
Chairman, Representative Gay, were you finished?
Well, just, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just to sort of put a period behind Chairman Lockhart's statement. Nix, it was the name of the dog that was found dead, and that's why we're able to use his name, and that's why this law was named after him. So it was a very tragic thing.
Question being called, Speaker Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to know one thing. The instance in Casper that's being discussed, was that reckless or was it criminal negligence and why?
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the time, it was neither. Because this statute didn't exist at the time it happened. We're building this as a response to this. So I would say it was reckless and negligent without criminal intent, but nonetheless, it was a reckless and negligent incident that resulted in Nix's death. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pelkey.
I think I would disagree with the representative from the county where the license plates have just one. that seems to me to be a clear case of negligence, and I would believe that that's how that would fall under the definition. It was negligent of the officer to leave the dog in the vehicle. I don't think it would rise to the level of recklessness.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 46 do pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The bill fails. House Bill 46 has failed the Committee of the Whole. Excuse me. All right. Those in favor, stand, please. And those opposed, please stand. Okay, right, it's right there. Having failed. Start right there. Okay. Thank you. Do I sit him down first?
There's more than 10.
Having failed a standing division roll call vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
No.
Baker.
No.
Baldwin.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
No.
Burkhart, excused. Bird. Campbell, Kennedy, Clem, Connolly, excused, Dayton, Edmonds, Edwards, Eklund, Esquivel, Freeman, Gay, Greer, excused, Halverson, Harshman, excused, Harvey, Hunt, Yagi.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Kasparik.
No.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz, excused. Nicholas, excused. Northrup.
Patton.
No.
Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Pieperinen.
Aye.
Pinnell.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Schwartz.
No.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz.
No.
Stubson excused. Throne.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 10 aye, 43 no, 7 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill 46, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Majority Floor Leader Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 75, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution 4, recommended do pass. House Bill 124, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 115, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 46, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Signed by Representative Jim Allen, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Allen.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Allen. Committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 27, NRC Agreement, State Authorization, respectfully reports soon back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stebson, one no vote, Representative Connolly, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 93, Public Service Commission-Authority, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Paxton, Danswanitzer, one conflict, Representative Lindholm, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 54, Corrective Action Account Distribution, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass for the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Edmonds, Gay, Kasperic, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, and Walters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to remind everyone today is the deadline to RSVP if you want to participate in Legislators Day at the University of Wyoming next Saturday. I would encourage you to go. I wish you would go. They've been doing some amazing things over there with all the money we gave them. I'd like you to see them. And we're going to see a great basketball game, and it'll be a wonderful day at UW. So I would encourage you to RSVP and participate in that. Committee announcements. Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My announcement isn't quite as exciting about the prospect of a good basketball game, but room 302 at your committee on education, number 4, will meet.
Vice Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The committee number 5, Agriculture, will meet in the morning at 7 o'clock. That's Tuesday, January 27th, in room H11. We'll continue House Bill number 70, the Omnibus Water Bill, and that's construction. That's a continuation from last Thursday, and House Bill 84, Conservation District Mill Levy.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting on Wednesday, January 28th at 8 a.m. in room B-1699 to hear Death with Dignity, House Bill 119. And we also have planned on Wednesday, February 4th at 7 a.m., there's going to be a field trip that other legislators are invited to. There's a limited number of spots, so let me know if you're interested. We're going to be going to the Quebec One site, the proposed site for the new historical site as part of the state parks. We'll be leaving at 7 a.m., back by 9:30 a.m. on February 4th. Let me know if you're interested.
Chairman Zwanitzer Dan. Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow night, 10 minutes after German, in room H-17, to hear the following 4 bills. House Bill 143, Motor Vehicle Registration Fees. House Bill 125, Law Enforcement Citation Quotas Prohibition. House Bill 77, State Employees Veterans Service Credit. And House Joint Resolution number 8, Longer Combination Vehicles Compact Agreement.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, January 27th at 8 a.m. in room H8 to consider the following bills: House Bill 132, House Bill 97, and House Bill 151. We'll further meet on Tuesday noon in room 302 to consider House Bill 83 and House Bill 90.
Chairman Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess to hear 3 bills: House Bill 45, Healthcare Sharing Ministry; House Bill 127, Termination of Employment Wages; and House Bill 166, Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Amendments.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor, please.
Please proceed.
This Thursday we'll have the second prayer breakfast at Egg and I, starting at 6:30, where we gather, and we're always out before 8 o'clock. Our speaker, our prayer breakfast, sharer, will be Sloan Hales. He's done it for us before, and Dr. Hales is one excellent inspiration for a lot of us. So if you can make it, please come, and there'll be a written or a copy of this in your file tomorrow morning.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was asleep at the wheel. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet in 10 minutes in room H-17 to discuss House Bill 71, Nursing Education Programs, and House Bill 88, Health Provider Recruiting Programs.
Chairman Zeehorse.
Thank you, Speaker Z. Brown. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess to work committee bill, House Bill 72, Volunteer Firefighter and EMT Pension Account, and re-referred bills, House Bill 10, Education State Authorization of Reciprocity Agreement, and House Bill 120, Tribal License Plates. And, Mr. Speaker, we're continuing our budget markup and hope to be finished this evening. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Madam Majority Floor Leader, that clears the deck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have two announcements, the first one being the bill cutoff next Monday, February 2nd. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure if you're working on bills that you try to get them completed by the 29th of January so that you're ready to have those filed. That's important. And as you know, the longer you wait, the more difficult it is for your bill to get introduced and work through the process. So keep that in mind and also respectful of the LSO attorneys and their time. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give you the list. I think you should have it handed out. You'll see that the general file is building, so we want to be conscious of our debate. If someone has already spoken on the topic and you're in agreement with them and it isn't necessary for you to speak, you might want to speed things up by just staying in your chair and listening. So, but I don't want to discourage debate, because that's important for us to make our final decisions when we vote. But we will start picking up a rapid pace here. All right, and with that, ladies and gentlemen, your list is House Bill 61, 94, 109, 89, 106, 96, 99, 81, 57, 141, 62, 150, 168, 102, 134, 27, 93, 28, and 53. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. January 27th, 2015.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, no. We're adjourned.